everybody. How are we all doing this morning? Well, I hope. Lovely, beautiful morning, isn't it? I mean, I looked out, I came up last night. I'm very, very busy at the moment. And I decided I would come up last night rather than try and risk it this morning. And, you know, trying to be proactive, I put a suit and a shirt and shoes and everything in a hanger and put it in my wardrobe so I could just pick it up yesterday and come out, because I had to go out with Angela and we had to do a few things before I could leave. So of course everything was late and I rushed away and left my suit hanging in the wardrobe. Anyway, not that it matters hugely, but there we are. It's lovely to be with you again. It's quite a while since I've been here. I could have checked and seen how long ago it was, but it's irrelevant really. But it's lovely to see you all. I've known most of you for so long. It's just wonderful to be here, it really is. And as you know, we've now moved down to Cornwall. You probably saw it in Touch. We visit occasionally, visit Exeter occasionally, at least we will do. We have been there already, of course, but I'm still speaking here and there, but that's going to diminish because of the travel involved, and I'm going to focus more on speaking about the Mission House. However, having said that, we used to have a church in Truro. I live just outside Helston, which is about another half hour on from Truro. So everybody down there has got webbed feet, you know, and talks funny. In fact, I was very tempted to come up here this morning and say, "All right, my lovelies." That's how they talk down there to tourists. Okay, I went into a shop just after we'd moved, because we moved last August, and the lady behind the counter said, "Such and such, such and such, my lover." What? I say. But that is really how they talk, actually. Anyway, so just for your own interest and nothing more, as I say, we used to have a church in Truro. Eventually that was merged and some people went to Exeter and some to Plymouth and what have you. But several months ago I spoke to James Henderson about contacting any people that we've still got on our database and see if they're interested in some kind of a get-together. So that will probably happen towards the end of this month. I gave myself 6 months from moving to get settled in and get some sort of organisation in the home. And boy, had I forgotten the stress associated with moving. It's 33 years we lived in Harpenden. And, I mean, where's Tom? There you are, yeah. You know all about this as well, so we're kindred spirits on this. Okay, this morning I just want to talk about the Mission House, particularly with a general overview about mission. But I'd like to start by telling you a story. It actually involves a visit I made to Wales quite a few years ago now, I suppose, thinking about it. But when things got on top of me, or were starting to get on top of me, and I just needed some space around me from the pressures of business and everything else, I'd sometimes, on a Sunday morning, get up about 4:30, 5 o'clock, jump in the car, whiz down the M4, straight off the other end, and go up to just north of Llandovery. There's a place called Llyn Brian, which is a great big lake. And I walked around it. It's about 20 odd miles, which is 20 plus actually, so it's a bit of a killer. But anyway, I had gone there on this particular morning, been round the lake, and it's peculiar how the mind works, because you get about halfway and it's too far to go back and it's the same distance to go forward. And your legs are killing you and you wish, what on earth am I doing this for, and all. That's all by the by. But anyway, I was on my way back, on the last leg of the journey actually, and I heard this bleating from the sheep. And as I walked up the road, up this sort of hilly road, it was on the side of a hill, there were a couple of sheep at the edge of the road, and one of them, which was a mature sheep, was there, and it was bleating like anything, and going like this as it was bleating. And then, underneath that bleating, I could hear like the bleating of a lamb. And as I got closer, I realized that the bleating of the lamb was coming from a ditch on the cliff side of the road, on the other side of the road to the sheep. presumably the ewe. And the basically what was happening there is the ewe was making a fuss to distract me away from this lamb. So when I went up and looked in the ditch, this lamb had somehow dropped itself in there and it was wedged in like this, which wasn't at all nice for it, obviously, and absolutely no way it could get itself out. So my heart was quite moved by this, and I got myself down into this little bit of a gully or ravine or whatever you want to call it, and picked up this sheep, this lamb rather, and brought it up to the top and put it on the road, and it immediately scooted across to its mother, and its mother, a couple of other sheep and the lamb all disappeared off. They probably thought Sunday lunch, no way Jose, you know. But anyway, the point I want to draw out of this is the fact that I believe anyway that we're hardwired to help people in need, or to help when we see a need for something. You can go to any culture, any place in the world, and you'll always find people who have a heart to help. And as I say, I believe that we're hardwired to help people. Can we go to the next slide, please, now, Richard? I like this. I can't remember now where I got it from. It's a quote of George Bernard Shaw, whom I'm sure we're all familiar with him. I think this is a very valid comment. It really is. Because it's when we get our hearts hardened and when we get a couldn't care less attitude about our neighbour, our environment, or whatever, that we start to get this attitude of indifference. And he describes it as the essence of inhumanity. And that's, I think, is a fairly profound thought. Now, as Christians, we have not just what we are hardwired with, but we actually have a mandate to show love and concern, outgoing concern, as we used to call it, love, concern, compassion towards our fellow man and towards the creation. Next slide, please. This is from Ephesians 2, actually. Why, I've got four up there. It's Ephesians 2. It says, "As a prisoner of the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Show each other compassion. Show each other concern. Allow the way you're hardwired to engage through the... allow the Holy Spirit to engage with the way we're hardwired and bear with one another in love. But to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ has apportioned it." And you go to verse 8, the last part, "He gave gifts to men." Now this begs the question, why? Okay, well it was he who gave the gifts, but why did he give them? He gave them, as it says in verse 12, to prepare God's people for works of service. Why? So that the body of Christ may be built up. That's the Holy Spirit inspired words written down by Paul. And they're very profound words. So this, as a Christian, is our frame of reference. We do good works so that the body can be built up. And another word for, or a word for a frame of reference, is a paradigm. That's our Christian paradigm. And if time permits, I'm going to come back to that in a little bit. So can we now go on to the next slide, please? So from the gifting that we have been blessed. But why have we been blessed? Build up the church, yes. But why? So that we can be a blessing to others. And our influence can impact the people who are what we would generally lump together as poor on the earth. Now by poor, I don't mean just materially poor. I mean the spiritually poor as well. But as we move forward and talk more about what the Mission House does, you will see an obvious emphasis there on the materially poor as well. Now, the Mission House I just like to describe as a three-way partnership between prayer partner volunteers, resource volunteers, and field staff volunteers. Now, prayer partner volunteers are people who support us in prayer. About 2 or 3 years ago, I was giving a talk about the Mission House in a church, and an elderly gentleman came up to me afterwards. When I say elderly, I mean I'm in my mid-60s, so he must have been then, I suppose, in his 80s, so that little bit older than me. And he said, "I can do that." I said, "What can you do?" He said, "I can be a prayer partner." He said, "I can impact other people's lives in the world by being a prayer partner." Now, how does it work? What was he excited about? Well, if you join us as a prayer partner, you should get a one sheet usually. It usually folded up as a trifold, but I'm a bit behind with these. But you'll get an update every so often telling you what the needs of the Mission House are, what to pray for, but also what to give thanks for boxes that have been ticked and areas where the Lord has led us and things that we have done and have come through successfully. And so the first group of people, and I consider them really the most important group of people, are people who will hold up this work of the Lord to the Lord to ask for his insights, for his spiritual guidance, for his direction, so that we're always moving and operating within his will. Now, since we've moved, we now live in a place where we have a little river that flows at the bottom of the garden, and joining it actually, or just, it's a little river that flows at the bottom of the garden, and then just beyond that, about another 10, 15 yards, there's an even bigger river, and the two join. And so I'm happy to stand there and just stare at the water, as one can, and it just struck me how these two waters come together and they mix and they get all swirled up together and there's no separating them. And so I thought, that's how the Mission House is. We are a confluence, two rivers coming together in that sense, a confluence of resources, both soft resources and hard resources. Do you all know what I mean by soft resources? Hard resources are pretty obvious, they're physical things. Soft resources, things like people, that's a lump it all under that one particular heading. Things that are intangible. And we are that mix of three people, of three groups: prayer partner volunteers, resource volunteers, and field staff volunteers. And if you imagine a Venn diagram, which is like three overlapping circles, ideally the three circles would be totally overlapped, but they never are. But it's where the three overlap and you get that join in the middle, where the emphasis that's in that circle is as the other circles have overlapped it. I should have done a drawing for this so you could understand it properly. But it's where they overlap. So prayer partner volunteers I've talked about. Resource volunteers are people who provide us with resources. Financial resources, of course. Time and skills, like accounting resources. Some people, or one person, has provided us with thousands, tens of thousands of pens which we've been able to use. Other people have given us dolls. We've just distributed 3,000 pairs of shoes in southern Madagascar. Brand new shoes. We have a whole range of physical stuff that which has come through our hands and we've been able to pass on and bless other people with. So resources. The most important resources that people can give are their time and skills. And I've had four volunteers working in the office since we moved the office, or up to the time we moved the office rather, doing various jobs for me which were helping us to progress and move forward. So in that case it was their time and their skills. So different kinds of resources. Okay, I don't want to labour the point too much. Field staff volunteers are people who go out into the field. This year, currently we've got 8 people working in southern Madagascar. Later later this year we'll have, from this church, we'll have Sherilyn and me. I don't know if any of you know her, Sherilyn. And we'll also have Dr. Stuart Rayburn from Glasgow going out. And I'll maybe say a little word about that when we get a bit further on. Okay, the point I'm trying to make here is that anybody and anyone can make a difference. Anyone and everybody can be involved if they see this as something that they'd like to be involved with. So what is our vision? Okay, here come the fancy words now. Everybody has to have a group of words which in as few words as possible sums up who and what you are. So here we go then. Our vision is the removal of spiritual and material poverty through relief, development and transformation of these various peoples. Now one of the reasons why we have to have these groups of words is because on application forms for grants, on applications of different sorts, we're asked to describe who and what we are in no less than 40 words or X number of characters. So it has to be boiled down. Next one, please. And then we've got our mission. So we are a Christian organisation, quite overt about that, accepting the good works of anybody wishing to serve alongside us according to their talents and abilities. In other words, if a non-Christian wants to come and work with the Mission House and they buy into our value system, even though they're not yet a Christian, they're welcome with open arms. The reason why? It's because it won't be long when they're actually in the field that they'll want to become a Christian. So, okay. I have first-hand experience of this, so. Okay, we're dedicated to the delivery of spiritual and material abundance by bringing our words. But actually, that's what we do. Thank you, Richard. Next one. So here we come then. Here's the crunch question. Can you make a difference? Can you? Well, Jesus said this, not me. Jesus said this. He said, I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, who are his brothers? Two groups of people, those who know Jesus and those who don't yet know Jesus. Have I left anybody out? I tell you the truth, that whatever you did for one of these least brothers of mine, you did it for me. Those are powerful words. What's it all about? We come full circle now. It's to prepare God's people for works of service. That's why he's gifted us. That's why he wants us to engage. Whether it's in the supermarket, whether it's in your place of work, wherever you are as a person, that's your mission field. Doesn't always work. Angela was in Lidl's in Helston doing some shopping, and there was a young, it was an East European young woman ahead of her, and she had bought some groceries, and she got to the checkout and didn't have any money. Now Angela has watched various programs, TV evangelists, which says, you know, evangelize at the supermarket checkout. So she said to this young woman and to the cashier, she said, I'd like to pay for those for you. I'm giving you the potted version. And the young woman turned around and said, I'm not having you paying for my, in her accent, I'm not having you buying my groceries for me. So you might try to do good sometimes, but it won't always work. Right. How can your influence be exercised? Well, you need to have a paradigm change. You need to be realistic about your gifting, and if you're going to be part of the Mission House and help to change lives and build the body of Christ, you need to engage in one particular way. Okay, I always like to talk about ripples and starfish. If you've heard this before, forgive me. If you've heard it many times before, here's your chance to be even more forgiving. Okay, ripples, you take a stone, you drop it in the water, and of course the ripples go out. And that's what a small act of kindness is. It's a ripple. Let me give you an example of a small act of kindness that changed a nation or helped to change a nation. I don't know the name of the person involved, but he was a London policeman. And Archbishop Desmond Tutu, when he was a young curate and was over here being trained, remembering that he came from South Africa, where you weren't even allowed to speak to a policeman if you were black, he had heard that you could go up to a policeman here and you could actually ask for the time or for directions or something like that. And he and a colleague, they were only young curates, were in Trafalgar Square sightseeing. They saw these policemen and they said, let's give it a try. Nobody's going, they won't attack us in Trafalgar Square, there's too many people. So they went up to this policeman and said, excuse me, sir, could you tell me the time, please? No, sorry, I beg your pardon. They went up and said, excuse me, officer, can you tell me the time, please? This policeman said, of course, sir, it's nearly 20 to 12. And that just blew them away. It blew them away. Because the policeman had been courteous, and he'd called them, sir, unthinkable from their culture. Totally unthinkable. And at that moment, the man who became subsequently the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, he realized that it was possible to have transformation in people and have respect from people without going down the road of violence and bloodshed and that particular path. So that young policeman, or that policeman, I don't know how old he was, that policeman helped to form and to change the nation of South Africa in his own way, his own particular way. So never, ever underestimate the power that your words have and the simple courtesies that you can extend to somebody in a certain situation, because you just don't know what the knock-on effect will be. I actually heard Bishop Desmond Tutu tell that story. I'd like to say I'd been to a big fancy dinner with him, but actually it was Desert Island Discs. So it is probably, I don't know whether you can still listen to it, but it's very, very, he makes some very interesting points. But I thought, isn't that fabulous? Excuse me, can you tell me this? After that, they used to go up to different policemen in different places and ask for directions and the time and everything, because they just couldn't believe that this was how people were, you know. Ah, before we move on, one more thing, apart from ripples. The other one is the starfish principle. Do you know that? Do you know this? Again, be forgiving if you've already heard it many times. The story is of a young boy walking along the beach with his dad, and the tide has dropped, and there's all these starfish being left high and dry by the tide, and the little boy picks one up, and he slings it back into the sea. And his dad looks down at him, and he says, oh, that's a nice thing to do, son, but it's not really going to make much difference, is it? You know. And the little boy looks up at his dad and says, it'll make a difference to that one. And that is a principle that I always keep in mind, because especially when I'm in the developing world, when I'm in places of intense need, the needs are so huge, so massive, that it's easy for the enemy to find a chink in your armor and just dump, what are you doing? What difference are you going to make? Blah, blah, blah. But of course, I know how to reject all that. So, I would like now to like to watch a 6 minute, 5 minute, 6 minute montage PowerPoint presentation of some of the past and present acts of service of the Mission House. Well, that's something of an overview. That's all it is. I didn't actually make that. I'd like to claim credit for it, but the guy who did it for us is a resource partner. He provides his skill, his time, to put together from our existing stock of photographs, which now number about 30,000, believe it or not, if you count videos as each frame as a still. I just think it carries the message sufficiently well. You've had a sneak preview of it, except for Gary, who's already seen it, on the website, because we put it on the website as well. There's a lot about that I would like to upgrade, I would like to refine. But because I have a tendency towards being a perfectionist, it can end up that nothing gets done. So I said to Stuart, the guy who did it, I said, put it on the website and we'll live with it, warts and all. And we'll upgrade it and refine it as and when time permits. But in as a way of saying thank you to all our supporters and donors and subscribers, we're actually in the process of duplicating that and sending it out on CD, on disc, which will play either on a DVD player or a CD player. So, is that right, a CD player? Whatever, anyway. Stuart's clever with these things. I might just tell you a little aside here. I've got so much I could tell you and keep you here all afternoon, but briefly, it was a long time before we got our website up and running in any kind of way that was satisfactory. And Stuart actually runs, he's director of a software company. That's what he does. He's an extremely intelligent man. And I was up to here with lack of progress with our website. So I went to him one day and I said, Stuart, I said, you know, the website, you know, we bang, bang, oh, the website, you know. I said, you wouldn't think of maybe looking after it for a little bit for us or something, would you, you know. Now, basically, just to give you a sense of perspective, that's a bit like going to a brain surgeon and asking him to cut your toenails. So he gave me an old-fashioned look, you know, and over his glasses and said, all right then. And we've made good progress with it ever since. Okay, let me move on from there. Let me share with you a little expression which I picked up. It was from David Silcox, I first heard it, and he got it from a book. I can't for the life, you might know it, if you do just call it out and I'll make a note of it later. But he said, God doesn't have a church with a mission. God has a mission with a church. And that stuck with me. It really resonated with me because that just gets things the right way around. And all of this is what the Lord is doing through his church. It's what he is doing as part of his mission through the church or not through the church. When I say the church, I mean the wider church, not just GCI. So there is so much going on and will be going on in the future. And I'd love to have the time to give you, a philosophical understanding of what's behind all this and what I'm going to go into in a minute. I don't want that to sound too highbrow because it isn't, but basically, you know, you saw the picture of a field with some greens growing in it. Well, that field, that land belongs to Le Triomphe, the orphanage that we've been working with for about 5 years. And when we started with Le Triomphe, they were utterly dependent on incoming donations from France and America, largely France. And then we got on board with them as well, so that helped. And has helped very substantially, actually. Now, any glitch in the world economy, which has subsequently happened, and they could have been in such a severe position, they have 118 places in the orphanage. And the children are brought in by the local police. They are sometimes abused, sometimes in the most awful ways. Sometimes they're abandoned. Sometimes they're babies, sometimes they're older, different ages. But they need the environment, the protective environment that the orphanage can give them. So imagine, because some people who pay themselves huge bonuses, which are really beggar's belief, I don't want to take a stand on that particularly from here, but because of that, some of those kids could find themselves out on the streets, or worse still. That's awful. That doesn't bear thinking about. Now, whatever the rights and wrongs of that situation are, the existing situation is, how can we deal with it? Here we have an orphanage, 118 children, dependent. We have to move them from dependency to independency, and from there to interdependency. So what do I mean by that? I mean that we move them from where they're utterly dependent on outside resources coming in to a point where they can be independent of that to a degree, as much as they ever can be in that environment. So that's where the land comes in. And now they're growing their own beans, they're growing their own rice. The production isn't good, and there's reasons for that. It's upland rice, it's not paddy rice. But the point is, as they're becoming self-sufficient in food. Now, probably this year, they should become self-sufficient in meat as well, if the chickens start producing properly and they're properly managed. They are now in a position where they are independent of the outside donations coming in. Follow me with this. Which is what they want to be. Now the idea is that they have enough land, although it's virgin land and has to be brought into production, which costs quite a bit. The idea is that they will grow surplus more than they need, and then they will then sell that surplus into the local markets and thus create a revenue stream for the orphanage, thus decreasing their dependency, increasing their independency, but moving them from independence to interdependence. Because once they start engaging with local markets and having relationships and responsibilities in the wider community, they will then be in a position where they can almost probably cut free from outside help. Now that will take a long time to happen. It probably will never happen, because we'll just move on. We'll want to put in a clinic or a small hospital. We'll want to do all sorts of other things as well. But you get my drift, that if anything happens in another part of the world, those kids will still be okay. So that's, I just wanted to share with you. I'm going to take a few minutes now, the remaining few minutes, just to say a bit about the academy. There's so much I'd love to tell you about this, but I want to tell you about the life skills course in particular. This is an 80-hour course where we offer primarily young school leavers and young adults to come and have a month's free education with us. The mornings are taken up with classroom sessions. The afternoons are community development projects. Some of them very basic. You saw some of them there, where we're actually planting a roundabout. They never do anything like that there, because people are living hand to mouth. The thought of planting a roundabout and adding something to the community like that is really quite revolutionary. And that, plus the other things that we've been doing, has really brought us right to the forefront of the attention of the local authorities. And we're getting opportunities now that we can't fulfill because we don't have the resources to do it. And I don't mean by that they're trying to piggyback on us. It's them giving us opportunities to do what we want to do. Anyway, that's another subject for another time. Let me tell you about this life skills course. It's 15 modules over 20 days, over a month actually, 20 working days. The topics that are covered are vision and goal setting, your personal worldview. Now that's the framework of reference I alluded to earlier, because if your framework of reference isn't right, your behaviours and your values and your attitudes won't be right. Healing of the past, in other words, forgiveness. Now they know that we're a Christian charity, but on this course there is no proselytising at all. However, when it's right and appropriate, God is brought into it as a way of giving them a reference point. This is a Christian country, Madagascar. There's no hostility towards Christians, let me put it like that. And healing of the past and forgiveness. When you have a lot of experience of people who are desperately poor, then the kind of experiences that young people, particularly girls, teenage girls, can have, are just awful. I went to a camp in Sri Lanka. Forget it. All right, we also talk them through the forgiveness process and how to deal with it and why they should deal with it. I mean, all these subjects could be sermons in themselves. We talk about communication and how essential good communication is for leadership, and how to be assertive when communicating. We introduce the concept, the alien concept, of volunteering, actually working for nothing, and community involvement. I mean, why work without pay? Okay. We talk about relationships, we talk about romantic relationships, Part of that is actually equipping girls with how to fend off advances from over-testosterone men or boys. But it's based on the family, it's based on God, and again, the biblical principles that underpin the whole of this course are brought out and shared in an appropriate way when it's appropriate. We talk to them about finances, about budgeting. Now, these are for people who can barely afford to come on this course, which costs them the equivalent of $10, about £8. That covers the cost of the workbook and the certificate that they get at the end, which is worth a lot to them. It's the first time in their lives, for most of them, that they've ever had any kind of acknowledgement saying that they had done something. We talk to them about debt avoidance, and we also introduce the concept of giving as well to them. We talk about job preparation skills, not just how to fill in an application form, but the wider issues surrounding employment. We also talk to them about entrepreneurship. An entrepreneur is somebody who can take an idea and he or she has the resourcefulness to actually bring that idea into reality. We talk to them about motivation and self-esteem, and we also have a module on African Renaissance, and this is something that was promoted by Thabo and Becky, but the actual work of the whole theory and reasoning behind African Renaissance was done by a guy called Sizwe Mthemba, who founded the World Changers organization. We also have an element on personal health, which includes basic things that perhaps most of us in this room would take for granted. We also deal with things like smoking and diet. And we also have a whole module on HIV/AIDS, which isn't a huge problem in Madagascar at the moment, but it's growing. And it's not out of control, but it's something that people need to be equipped and to understand what the issues are surrounding it. And I'm delighted that Dr. Stuart Rayburn from the Edinburgh Church will be coming out to Madagascar. It'll basically be a fact-finding trip, but I'm also going to connect him with various people out there as well. And my hope is that he will be able to make a significant contribution to our HIV/AIDS program. A lot of the preparatory work for it is already done, and it's just sitting on my computer, just waiting for me to hit the go button when we have the resources to go with it. I should tell you why I'm excited about this, is because Stuart, he's a GP, but he is also working with the HIV/AIDS unit in, is it Glasgow or Edinburgh now?
Glasgow.
It is Glasgow, yeah. Okay. He lives in Edinburgh?
No.
He lives in Glasgow.
Okay,
I do apologise, I got that the wrong way around. Too many things going on. And I don't share put too much into the public domain, but I have great hopes about this, okay? So that's anyway something that we deal with. On the wider issues of health, and I'm just going off this course for a moment, it's been on our agenda for about 3 years now to start a community health programme. We've had a nurse, a midwife trainee under training at medical school for the last 3 years. She will graduate this November and hopefully will come on board with us, and she'll be a key part of our medical program. I'm out of time now, but I'd love to talk to you more about that and the people who are interested, people who have the capacity and the interest to make it really work well. We also deal on the course, coming back to it, with conflict resolution. We talk about emotional maturity, about dealing with grief, about control and bullying, about revenge, about anger. All these things with a biblical underpinning. And we also talk about personal development. We talk about self-leadership, character, self-discipline, time management, value of friends. And I've just whizzed through all those titles. But these are life-changing modules for the people. When I was there, the actual frame is up there of a Malagasy lady at a whiteboard writing. I was to her right. And when I was there, working through the interpreter, I said, I'd like to ask some questions to the class. So I did this. I walked into the up to the class and I said, so what's this course doing for you? How are you enjoying it? And how is it? And so you would respond. And I walked down the room again and I said, Tony, how's it going for you? Which has been the best module so far? And I was about to go over here and something made me turn around and say, tell me about the course. And the whole class just erupted with laughter. So I thought, what have I said? What have I done? And it turned out that this young woman, married lady, had been, her transformation was really quite something. She had all sorts of anger issues. She had not had a happy time as a teenager. As a consequence of that, she was frigid. And if her husband tried to come near her, she'd take the potty from under the bed, because they don't have the kind of sanitation we have, and empty it over him. And I think that's why the class laughed. Not an ideal marriage situation, you have to admit. So anyway, through a desire within herself that had been released through the material that she was being exposed to, she sought some counsel and some guidance and received it. And she started to change. And then in the third week of the course, her husband turned up to talk to Mantina, our guy. And he said, what have you done with my wife? And he sensed that it wasn't an issue. So he said, well, what do you mean? So she said, there's been a revolution. She's just so different. She's so changed. So Mantina said, well, that's good. So he said, yeah, the issues that we used to have gone. I'm delighted to say. It's fantastic. So that was just a little insight into one particular individual young woman whose lives have been changed by the resources that have been made available to the Mission House to do that kind of work. Let me also tell you, that course is free, by the way. Let me also tell you in closing that, like us, who are to be salt and light in the community, the students off that course are becoming salt and light in their community. As a consequence of what we have been doing, we have had local employers come to us to tell us, to ask us, would we run this course suitably modified for their whole staff. And 2 weeks ago, Mantina, I should have been there for this, but I don't have the money to go over there at the moment. He was sitting in a room with 14 executives from Rio Tinto Zinc, who are basically removing great huge chunks of the countryside in southern Madagascar, shipping them to Canada and turning them to basically what we would call white pigment. So everywhere where you see white, it has to have pigment in it. And this comes from some ore that's mined there. So they want us to do the course. And the local customs officials, customs organization, have invited us to do the course for them. Other NGOs and charities that are working in the area have come to us and said, can they put their people onto our course? And we've said yes. And we've invited the other NGOs and charities that if they would like to make a donation, it would be very welcome and very well received. For the people from the companies and the organizations like Customs and Rio Tinto, we will be charging them an appropriate fee. So the course is still free to our target audience, but for the wider group that are interested in it, it will create a revenue stream for us. Because at the moment, the Mission House Madagascar is dependent. We want to get it to independence and interdependence. So we've got a lot of work to do there. Next step will be a community health program. As soon as we can get the funds for it, I want a computer laboratory and also a teaching. We're going to start teaching English. Cheryl Lee Namee from Manchester, she'll be, she's already redoing the qualifications for teaching English, and she'll be going down there later this year on a long-term mission. If it works out, she could be there for 2 years to teach English, which again is something that I plan that we'll charge for. So here's the message. Lots going on, lots happening. If you'd like to come on board with us, please do. There's three areas you can join, or you can come as get involved in all three areas. But I'm a realist. So it's your call. No, just, you know, it's how it grabs you. But just remember, and this is what I really want you to take away more than anything else today. Remember that slide, which is a quote from Ephesians, which said that we have been given gifts, we have been equipped, we have been blessed from on high so that we can be a blessing to other people. And in so doing, build up the body of Christ. Yeah.
Nigel, thank you for that.